WICN in Worcester, this is the Venture Forum, tales of entrepreneurship from central Massachusetts. I'm your host, Mark Reed Edwards, Executive Director of the Venture Forum. Now let's start today's tale. This week's guest on the Venture Forum is Rachel Kemp, Vice President of Pickwick Capital Partners, focused on mergers and acquisitions within cybersecurity, defense, and fintech markets. Rachel's capital raising activities leverage resources within the alternative asset financing, private equity, venture capital, and family office investment arenas for companies in the lower middle market. Rachel is also a member of the TVF Executive Committee. Rachel, it's great to have you on the Venture Forum. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Mark. This is a wonderful opportunity to just sit and have a nice chat with you today.
So, Rachel, I gave the audience an overview of your bio, and it barely touched the surface. Can you share your career path that led you to Pickwick?
Well, I've had the most unusual career path for an investment banker. I was your classical liberal arts student. I was a German studies major. Now, straight out of college, everyone said, go away. But I talked my way into Booz Allen and Hamilton International, where once again, I was taught to think quickly. When we took on a new engagement, you had 24 hours to become the expert. You start at zero and you get quickly up that hill so that you're having meaningful, substantive conversations with your client or even the prospect, because it becomes your job to actually bring in the prospect, engage them so that they become a client. And I've used this experience throughout my career, where I worked in the financial markets in South America. I've experienced economies by fiat, which can drive the normal person quite nutty at times. You never know where the currency will be. Someone wakes up in the morning and they say, this is it. And again, all of that volatility and being able to manage that helped me to become an investment banker. Then I came back to Massachusetts, where I became the Assistant Secretary for Economic Affairs. I've held CFO positions. I've held CEO positions. As the CEO of an emerging predictive analytics company, I understood what it meant to really build a business that was scalable and investable. And the two must go hand in hand. You know, there's nothing like developing a technology and you're not responding to a problem. You know, at least today, investment money wants to see technology that is addressing a problem. And luckily for me, predictive analytics was something that needed to be addressed at that time. Eventually, it got to the point where I was talking to a woman in New Hampshire, and I was once again telling my story about how I really wanted to become an investment banker, and I've been working at ancillary functions within the investment banking arena almost my entire professional career, and will I ever find that opportunity? And she leaned across the table with all intent and said to me, Pickwick Capital is hiring. And, you know, it was as if angels spoke to me at that moment. And I asked her, well, can you tell me a little bit about that? And she said, all you have to do is call Doug Greenwood. Once again, I wasn't coming from a bulge bracket firm. I didn't have tons of experience. I had no pipeline. I wasn't licensed. But what I did have was just sheer doggedness. And Doug Greenwood will tell you that I literally called him every day at 4:30 in the afternoon until he picked up the telephone. And he said to me, if you will just stop calling me, I will agree to have lunch with you, but you must abide by my decision. And I said, fine, not a problem. So Doug Greenwood and I agreed that we would have lunch. I would abide by whatever he said. I would bring him my resume and I would bring him a writing sample. We had lunch and the rest is history. am now a fully licensed investment banker, and now I have a pipeline. Now I bring in transactions. Now I run my own transactions, and there can be no happier person on the planet than Rachel Kemp, who is an investment banker, finally.
So one of the things I love to talk to people about on this show is Massachusetts. You went to college here. What makes Massachusetts special for you?
I just love Massachusetts. If you pay attention, you can have exactly the same kind of life that everyone runs to New York City to try and develop. You can sit on corporate boards. You can have a successful career. The arts are here. Education is here. Post-educational opportunities are here. You just have to pay attention. And with all of the brain trust that is here in Massachusetts, where else would you want to be?
Yeah, and we're building something special here in central Massachusetts around Worcester, too.
Well, you know, you wanted me to touch on my work in co-developing a growth state product or a model that measures the contribution by two-digit SIC code model for the state's gross state product analytics. And that's where Worcester, Central Mass really is highlighted, because the real contribution in Massachusetts does not move east to west. It moves north to south here in Massachusetts. And that is one of the things that came out of the study. So I think that Worcester, Central Mass are all poised for greatness. You have lower operating costs. You have a brain trust that has found itself in Worcester, in Central Mass, because of resources that are being made available, because it's a cluster, it's almost like a cluster industry where companies are coming to support the technology that is being developed in the area. And it's just, it seems easier. There's more flexibility, more latitude to develop successfully than to be here in Massachusetts, in Boston, or in Cambridge with all of the pressures that come along with that.
I find economics fascinating. You know, people call it the dismal science, but I think there's just a lot to learn in economics. And so I'm interested in drilling a bit further down and what it was like working for the Commonwealth and co-developing that gross state product analytics tool.
I thought that working, well, number one, who calls economics the dismal science? Because they have then never really understood the impact of M1, M2, M3, looking at inflation factors, and then looking at true economic development. You know, I always tell people, let's look at the basics. What's going to support this company? Is it just going to be something out there and hopefully it does well? Or is there a core of businesses that can go, that can really embrace, envelop this company to help it survive? Look at our biotech medical industry and the billions of dollars that generates right here in the city of Boston, right here in the Commonwealth. And how does it do that? It's a core business with several businesses, several industry clusters that have embraced it to make it what it is today. To answer your question around the analytic tool, It was a great idea. There were the owners of the data that when I went to them and explained what it is that I would like to see and how it should look and play out. I was so lucky that they own the data. It was right here at UMass Amherst. So once a week, I drove out to meet with them, and we talked about how the model was to be built, how the analytics could be measured, and we were able to really identify every business in Massachusetts and what was their contribution to the economy. And it was one way that we were trying to look at resource allocation. And there was also a very funny argument that I was involved with. I was always told that Massachusetts had a very laissez-faire economy. Unfortunately, I didn't believe that. I always referenced a very smart man who worked at the Federal Reserve back in 1949. And he wrote a report that said, Massachusetts shall have biotech. Massachusetts shall have medtech. Massachusetts shall have. And as every one of those techs that he identified, we have those today as the anchor of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts economy. So it was just a great experience, and I would do it all over again if I had the opportunity.
There's truth in numbers, right?
Absolutely. Any good accountant will tell you the numbers tell the real truth. Numbers never lie.
So instead of making decisions based on seat of the pants, when you've got an analytic tool like you built for the state, for a business, for a family, you can understand what you're doing.
Exactly. You're able to build into the economy, and even on a personal level, resiliency. And that's why Massachusetts' economy has been able to bounce back from pandemics, natural disasters, all sorts of things, because we have built-in resiliency in our economy, because we're able to look and say, this is coming down the pike, this is how this particular vertical is going to be impacted, what do we do to protect that?
Right. So you've participated in a number of TVF events recently as a judge and moderator. And I'm interested in what it was like to judge the 5-minute pitch contest and what you looked for in the pitches. And is there any advice you could give an entrepreneur who is out there pitching their business?
I think I can give them some advice. And it's the same thing that I'm actually looking for when I hear a pitch. Number one, I need to hear the entrepreneurial passion, the fire in the belly. You know, if you deliver your pitch in sort of a deadpan fashion, why should I listen to you? Because there are 25 million other people jumping up and down saying, you know, this is wonderful. I've put my life into this. Listen to me. That's number one. Number two, be able to clearly explain your business concept. Even with technology, you should be able to very clearly articulate what it is, what's the problem, is this a solution, is it a complete solution, is it a partial solution, and where do we go from here? And then, is the business scalable? Look at not the total market, but look at the piece of the market that you can actually grasp, that you can put your hands around and say, okay, this is the market that we are going to be dealing with. And it's not the whole market, it's a percentage of the market. and give us that flavor for where you fit and how is this going to work and how will the economics of your industry impact your ability to get to market, stay in market, find the right investor, and grow. That's what I look for every time I'm listening to a pitch.
So before we break, I want to talk about your amateur cellist life. You play the cello, and do you find that your artistic side informs the way you work in business?
I think that my artistic life and my beekeeping, I've ordered bees, makes me a little calmer because you can see the flow, and where there's a break or there's a problem, you're able to say, okay, this isn't all together as of yet. And it's not a deal breaker for me. It just means that something is missing. And let's find that, let's put it in place and let it flow. Let it flow beautifully, just like music.
Yeah. And I guess like a cellist, a good cellist practices, and you can probably tell when someone's pitching you when they haven't really practiced, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. My orchestra, we have not been able to get together. We tried to do some things virtually, and it made it hard to practice. But now that we're coming back together and the four cellists that constitute that piece of the orchestra, you're forced to practice because we can hear each other, and you absolutely know when someone hasn't even looked at the music. So yes, like any musical performance, like anything that we do in life, you practice makes perfect. And that goes along with the pitch.
Yeah, and it's knowing your role too. It's a team. Being in an orchestra is being in a team.
Right. And you cannot let your team members down. When I first, the first orchestra that I joined, and I did all of this as an adult, I woke up one morning, raised my hand as I normally do, and I announced to the world that I was going to play the cello. And everyone said, sure. But again, persistence, doggedness, being able to focus on the goal, I play the cello today. And it's the same in business. You must be focused. You must have that dogged determinedness. And you must also be able to accept criticism. It's not personal. It's being given to you to make you better.
Yeah, that's great wisdom. We'll be back in a moment with Rachel Kemp, so stay tuned. Rachel, you moderated a great discussion for TVF recently on what it takes to get venture funding. What do you think the keys are? And maybe mention a little bit about the stack that you went through when we had our discussion.
The stack begins with friends and family. And then in some cases, you really should be looking at having some debt in the company. That shows a certain level of viability. And then you're able to begin looking at venture, looking at the alternative asset financing options that are out there in the market. Some companies are not willing, or because of their stage of development, they are not willing to really give up the equity early on. There are avenues for them to find financing as well. And I think that in our last session where we talked about the venture capital market, it was interesting to hear how they are no longer becoming the risk takers. You know, everyone who had a good idea, you went to a VC firm, they threw some money at it and hoped that it would stick. Now they're looking for the same things that the PE firms, the private equity firms, the high net worth individuals, the family offices are looking for. Do you have revenues? Do you have visibility to revenues? Do you have visibility to profitability? When will that happen? And these are all parts and pieces of the fabric that make up a successful company. Because no one wants to just throw money at an opportunity any longer. They're looking for that return. They're looking at a reasonable return. And they want to know, do you have that same objective?
I know some people around the country in Los Angeles, Kansas City, Atlanta, who are doing opportunity zone investments. I think it's fascinating. Can you explain what they are?
Well, opportunity zones really came out of legislation in the Obama administration. And they've gone from the Obama administration to the Trump administration, and now the Biden administration. They are not going away. And it was in the Trump administration that the piece that everyone was waiting for, how these dollars could be applied to the small business investment community, actually emerged. And there are tons of rules. I was told yesterday that there is a 544-page manual of nothing but regs. So to do one of those transactions, anyone who thinks that they can do it on their own is maybe deluding themselves. They may want to hire the appropriate professionals to help them to get through the maze of regulations. And then the testing. Every 6 months, you must test yourself to determine whether you are still a qualified opportunity zone business. So it is fascinating. I think that you'll see a lot of money moving into that arena, particularly as individuals and even corporations are now looking to shield capital gains. And it remains to be seen what happens at the end of the day.
I guess we'll see what happens. I know Worcester has a number of opportunity zones. It'll be interesting to see what happens as development around, say, Polar Park continues, whether people will take advantage of that.
They should look. If they're in an opportunity zone, there's no harm in examining what it would take to structure a transaction.
Yeah. Interesting. So I love, at the end of these chats, I love to peer into the future because no one really knows what's going to happen, but it's kind of fun to think about it. So what do you see in the future for entrepreneurs in Worcester, Central Mass, and Massachusetts in general?
I see a very bright future. Massachusetts as a whole will remain a driver of industry, technology, and capital for entrepreneurs. That's only good news. Every single day, it's good news because you'll be able to go out there, beat the bushes, find your opportunity, find your money, and ultimately grasp that brass ring that says, I've made it. I've made it successfully.
Yeah, and there's an attitude I think you have to have too to succeed, don't you think?
Sure. I mean, don't think that the opportunity is going to find you. That's a very, very rare instance. What happens is that you have to find the opportunity. You know, on June 10th, there's going to be a webinar where the issue of acquisition or entrepreneurship via acquisition will be the topic. And even there, you're going to have to find the business that you're going to build as an entrepreneur, that you'll use as your platform for entrepreneurship. And it takes work. It takes, I've used this term several times during the course of our chat, it takes shared doggedness. And you will have your bad days, you'll have your good days, but that's all part of the mix. No one has a perfect run from ground zero to where the company has opened its doors and is humming along. It just never happens that way.
Kind of like learning to play the cello, right? No one came to you and said, hey, do you want to learn to play the cello?
No one did. And several people have said, you know, try and find another instrument. You know, I was beat challenged. I read notes. I could read the music, but I could not cleanly play quarter, half, wholes, 18th, 16th, and 32nd notes. I couldn't. It took my ability to just sit there and do the exercises, we call them etudes, and make those etudes sound like music. And to this day, everyone knows I am beat challenged, but I put in the effort so that I can play my music, so that I can play with my colleagues, my team members, and do my part to make us successful.
That's great. It's a great lesson for business. Thank you so much for joining me on the Venture Forum, Rachel. It was a great discussion.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much. And I hope that your audience enjoyed our little chat.
I'm sure they will. I'm Mark Reed Edwards. We'll see you next time. Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Venture Forum from WICN in Worcester. Learn more at theventureforum.org and join us next week as we share tales of entrepreneurship from Central Massachusetts.